Welcome to Linda's Corner. My name is Linda Bjork. Today we're going to be talking about children's mental health. I'm so grateful to welcome pediatric mental health expert Dr. Roseanne Capanna-Hodge as our special guest today. Dr. Roseanne teaches parents proven holistic therapies to help children be calm, happy, listen better, get better grades, and get along better with others. Her latest book, called It's Gonna Be Okay, exemplifies her message of hope and confidence. She helps parents move from thinking if he gets better to when he gets better. Thank you so much for joining with me today, Dr. Roseanne.
Well, thank you for that lovely introduction, Linda. I am super excited for this conversation because children's mental health is really an important topic, and you're helping so many parents by having this podcast and having this conversation.
I'm so excited to be able to visit with you today. I feel like it's Christmas morning, and I'm just ready to unwrap these little packages of wisdom, and I just can't wait.
Well, isn't that awfully kind of you?
I love what you're doing. I think parenting is probably the most important job in the world, and to be able to help and parent.
It is a big job.
Yeah, and it is a hard job. It is on-the-job training. I mean, it's like going to school. And I know for me, I raised five wonderful children, and one of them had ADHD and Asperger's. And I thought, oh, this is more than I signed up for. I thought I was signing up for the entry-level parenting 101 where I could just breeze through it. And instead, somebody shoved me into these upper division hard classes, and I thought, what do I do? So I'm so grateful that you have these awesome things to share to help parents who feel like they're tossed into these upper division classes of parenting that they never expected, and now they could use a little help. So please, help us.
Linda, first of all, I love that analogy that you've been thrown into an upper division course. I've never heard somebody say that, but it is true, right? You know, what happens is you have this vision, right? I'm going to have these babies. And, you know, when I had my kids, I was like, they're going to a Montessori school and we're going to do this. And, you know, as a mom with two special needs kids, you know, out comes my Max, and, you know, he ain't Montessori, you know, school material. He got kicked out after I don't know how many weeks. And, you know, a heartbroken mom, the lady told me that my kid was a feral animal.
Ooh, ouch.
Yeah, ouch. And she went on and on and on how they never had a kid not make it at their school. Oh, thank you. For your kindness and compassion during a time when you're a scared mother, regardless of whether you are a professional or not. So, you know, you're so right. We have this vision that it's going to go a certain way, and you're right. It's on the job training. You have to get a license to fish. You don't have to have a license to have a kid. And kids are challenging in so many ways. My kids couldn't be more different. And they have strengths in different areas. And in one way, my Max, who was put on this earth to humble me, is easy in certain ways, right? And then my younger kid, Giancarlo, I mean, he's why people have five kids. I mean, you don't meet too many people that have beyond three kids, right? Forget about two. And it takes a special person to have four, five, six kids. I have friends that have that many kids. And, you know, after having my Max, who, you know, he meant that there is no sleeping on the job, my Max. This, talk about on the job training, you had to do things a certain way, and you always had to anticipate friction. And when you have a special needs kid, or sometimes it's a temperament issue with your kid, or anxiety, or clinical issue, whatever's going on, there are certain kids, man, do they make you be, you know, really your best self and really try to take care of yourself. I remember working with a mom, one of my favorite moms of all time. And she had four kids, and the three were so easy. And then the fourth came. And she said to me, he was put on this earth to humble her. And, you know, she said, I didn't understand when other mothers said their kids were difficult. And she was like, oh, I understand now. So, you know, we're all facing challenges. We are community connected by parenting, right? There's so many wonderful children in the world. And we need to do more to lift each other up. And that's part of what I'm doing, is really trying. So many parents are out of hope. they're overwhelmed right now. And I want to have this global conversation about how to support kids' mental health, but also parents' mental health too.
Right, because we are intended to be their support system, and we need to know what we're doing, and we need to be in a good place ourselves in order to be able to help them.
100%, right? And, you know, for a lot of reasons, right? So first, out of the gate, there's something called co-regulation, Linda. So how we regulate ourselves, our kids at a subconscious level will regulate based on how we're regulating. So if we're calm, our kids are more likely to be calm. If we're agitated, our kids are more likely to be agitated. And it's not what you say, right? It's how you're acting. And then the other part of that is that conscious awareness, as well as subconscious awareness, that when you're taking care of yourself, one, you're going to feel better, but two, your kids are going to see you handling stress, not avoiding stress, handling stress and watching how you problem solve. And that is so important in a day when kids are lacking resiliency and coping skills, which is big part of the reason some kids are exceptionally struggling right now without necessarily major changes in their life in terms of, you know, their parents have a loss of income or they've lost their home or just all those major, major factors that are happening to a lot of people in America. But certainly the changes in education have really walloped people. But coping skills, resiliency are critical components for wellness, not just for kids today, but future wellness as well.
So are you suggesting that the first place that parents start is to work on themselves? Is that kind of what I'm getting?
Yes, absolutely. And that means, you know, I know that may feel overwhelming for parents, but as little as 10 minutes a day, Linda, of things like breath work, gratitude journaling, prayer, biofeedback, simple things, right, can really help to support what's called the autonomic nervous system, right? So that's our part of our nervous system that regulates stress. And when we're in a relaxed state, it's called parasympathetic dominant. So those type of activities, at least 10 minutes a day, help our nervous system calm down into what I call the hot tub state, in that relaxed state. And when we're stress activated, we're in this sympathetic dominant state. And what that means is we are actually more reactive to things, right? And if you can imagine, like, you're running out the door, you go to grab something from the fridge, you're already late, and stuff spills all over. And, you know, you can't leave it. And what happens? You're already activated, the spill happens, and you're even feeling it even more, right?
Absolutely.
Versus if you're regulated and calm and the spill happens, you're like, eh, the spill happens. I mean, I'm already late. What's the big deal? So how we're protecting our nervous system really not only affects how we manage stress, it actually affects how we react to stress, how we view stress. So self, you know, care is not a luxury. It's an essential, not only for yourself, but showing how you model and manage those stressful situations is really critical. That's how kids learn to problem solve.
Oh, that's fantastic. So we have to model the correct behavior.
And even when you don't, when you're struggling, you have to say, I'm having a rough day. And this is why I'm having a rough day. This is what I think about it. And this is what I'm doing about it. You know, like, get it out of your head and talk about it and have these conversations with kids. You know, learning how to manage stress is called learning. And we are teachers. And so it's multifaceted. You can't just tell your kids, oh, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to develop these skills over time. And a lot of it's through practice. And it starts with you.
And I really like the idea where you're talking about walking through it, that I don't have to pretend that I'm already perfect and that I know everything. But if I can say, this is what I'm working on, then that can help the kids feel safe, like, oh, it's okay if I'm not perfect too, and this is something that I can be working on, and we can be learning this together. That is a very comforting thing as a parent, because like we say, this is on-the-job training, and I don't know all the answers right away. And so to be able to say, it's okay that I don't know all the answers today is very reassuring.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And on so many levels, right? It takes the pressure off us, Linda, from trying to be perfect in a world where that sort of is what everyone is trying to do. And social media lets us think that. But it also, just like you said, lets our kids know that you shouldn't have to be perfect, right? You know, I had this conversation last night with an old client, and I love to hear how some of the kids that I've, you know, helped to transform their lives, how they're doing later. And so my mom called me about a sibling. And please know that I protect people's identity and I don't tell you all the details, and I certainly muddle the details so you can't recognize it. But it was a great conversation. This was a great mom who I really enjoy and, you know, has mom struggles, but has such a great attitude about it. And, you know, her daughter is not an academic and she does well. She's a B student. But in the world of school, if you're not an A student, you're nothing. Ooh. And that really is what the message these teenagers are getting, the wrong message. And so this mom has been hammering this kid like, you are self-confident, you are this, you are that, you have all these gifts, right? You're an artist or whatever. And her self-esteem is so wrapped up in this false perception that if you're an A student, you're the best, right? And she has skills in so many ways beyond what her peers do. I mean, her mother said, she's so responsible. I never have to worry about her doing this, that, and the other thing. I don't get parents telling me that, you know? And so I think that when we are caught up in this sense of perfection, it really can have a negative domino effect. So we need to lead by example, let your kids know that we're not perfect, and these are the choices that I would make, right? And you need to have that communication at a time when you're not, you know, noticeably stressed, your voice is gonna be tense, you're angry, those kind of things. Like, you know, I love humor, right? When I mess up, I a lot of times bring a lot of humor in, and I can see my kids bringing it back to me. They love to tease me about things that I, you know, normal things that I make a mistake, right? Like speeding down the road and getting a ticket. You know, my 10-year-old was in the car and loves to razz me about it, right? Like, oh, I hope you don't get a ticket, you know, and stuff like that. And it's just a great thing. And I was like, hey, listen, I got a speeding ticket and mommy deserves it because she hasn't had one in like 20 years. So
well done. I liked in your example how the parent wasn't putting those unrealistic expectations on her child, where sometimes as parents, we get this identity connection that our kids have to be perfect because they're a reflection of us, and my kids have to be perfect because I raised them perfectly. And so the parents, instead of being that support that we really should be, we add to the pressure with, you know, because our own egos can kind of get wrapped into what our kids do and how they behave and their successes.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, parents never intend to do anything that's going to cause stress. I just don't think that they realize it. You know, you're right. It's an inadvertent pressure on a kid, right? You know what I mean? And that's something I face all the time. And, you know, I certainly bring that to light in a very loving way with the parents that I work with. But, you know, we certainly want our kids to grow and, you know, have goals and things like that. But, you know, this mom got it. Kid, I'm not telling you to be a straight A student. I'm telling you, no, I'm giving you the, you know, permission to be the best version and of who you are.
Ooh, I like
and
that.
It's so important to have these conversations with your kids. And even though this parent is having this conversation in ridiculously loving way, I've known this mom a long time, this kid is still in a pressure cooker because of her peers. And so that's why we really, really need to be careful and have open dialogues all the time. These are ongoing evolutionary conversations.
Absolutely. Okay, so we have been talking about parents and how it's okay to not be perfect and that it's a tough job and that we need to work on ourselves. So can you give us some tips, some natural things of, okay, now I'm in this situation, what do I do?
So, you know, I wrote this book called It's Gonna Be Okay. And I call it It's Gonna Be Okay because that's what I tell every parent when they come in. Because, you know, Linda, when your kid is struggling, kind of nothing else sort of matters, right? And it's hard to not worry, you know, like how many times did you get up in the middle of the night? And so for 30 years, I've been working with kids and their families in different ways. And I have used these tools and techniques and have supported families in reducing and reversing mental health symptoms. And I talk about reversing mental health symptoms because some mental health symptoms, depending on what is the underlying root cause, can be reversed. And so in my book, It's Going to Be Okay, I talk about 8 pillars of hope and healing. And these 8 pillars are things that are all evidence-based. I have over 40 pages of research citations. And because I want people to know there is another way beyond psychiatric medication, beyond traditional talk therapy, and there's lots of ways. And when we talk about the 8 pillars, we're talking about things like stress management, which I talked about. We're talking about nutrition, nutritional deficiencies, genetic mutations, sleep, detoxification, parenting. And what I specialize in, besides parenting, is brain-based therapies. Things like neurofeedback, biofeedback, PMF, meditation, and specific types of psychotherapy. And so when parents feel stuck, and that's what I talk a lot about, I have a program called the Get Unstuck program. When parents feel stuck, they don't know where to start, right? So a lot of times they might ask a teacher, they might ask their pediatrician, and a lot of times the road leads to one thing, which is psychiatric medication.
Medication.
Right. And, you know, let's talk about autism. There is no medication for autism.
Right.
Right. But I don't know too many kids on the spectrum that aren't on multiple medications. That seems to be what people often recommend. And what I am doing is opening the eye, what I have been doing for 30 years is teaching parents about these 8 pillars and how you can make small changes to create big waves, right? And so important in a time we feel very overwhelmed that we're showing parents, you know, pick 1, 2, 3 things, tops. Have consistency around it, and, you know, it will happen, right? And, you know, healing also never occurs on the timeline that we think it's going to, but yet we have been convinced through great marketing by pharmaceuticals that if you take a pill for something, you're going to get change immediately. And that isn't what happens.
Right. But we wish it would. We hope it would. We would love all of our problems to go away instantly.
Right.
But healing, real healing, doesn't work that way. Masking, we can mask a little bit, but the real healing takes time and it takes a process.
I mean, let's talk about anxiety, right? So people go and take a pill for anxiety. Okay. So some people, I'm not even saying a lot of people, some people might feel some relief short term. But if you're not changing the way you act, the way you behave, right? If you're not, you know, if you're going to just constantly worry all the time, or you're going to make negative statements out loud all the time, if you're going to not leave your house because you're anxious, right? How is that anxiety going to change? It's not.
No.
You have to pair the regulation of the nervous system, which I do with things like meditation and breath work and yoga and neurofeedback and biofeedback, with new learning. And that new learning can come through coaching. It can come through very specific types of psychotherapy, right? And when you pair that together, you regulate that nervous system, then you can access your brain, your frontal lobes, and you can think more clearly to actually make changes that really can change these behaviors, can get rid of them completely, which is what we do a lot of the time. But if you can't get rid of them completely, you can always make them better, right? And for some people that happens quick. And what's quick? It's not less than 3 months, people. You got to relearn things, right?
Wow. The new definition of quick.
Right. A new definition of quick. I, again, really good marketing has gotten people to realize this. You know, I was doing an interview yesterday with a physician, and we were having this conversation, and she was a weight loss specialist. And she said, you know, Roseanne, I didn't have one course in nutrition, and I'm a weight loss specialist, MD, and I'm advising people about their diet. Okay. Problem number one. Problem number two, she said, the only training I got in mental health And this is a younger doctor, okay? The only training I got in mental health was one thing. I knew what the answer was: pharmaceuticals. She goes, we got right. no training on how to properly identify and help and support people with anxiety or depression or OCD. Nothing, except there was a pill that was going to fix it. She's like, major, major problem. So why is that person on the top of our mental health pyramid? It's not. The person who's on the top of the mental health pyramid, in the case of kids, is the parent. And the parent knows their child's mental health. And my work is to teach parents these ways that they can start moving the dial and start improving things. And they're not even aware of all how powerful things are, like breath work or adding essential fatty acid to your kid's regimen, and what happens in the brain and what happens with neurotransmitter communication when you add essential fatty acid.
When you give your body what it needs and your mind
Absolutely.
What it needs.
Absolutely.
That is huge. Now, there are a couple things that you've talked about that I am not familiar with. That's the biofeedback and the, what was the other one? Neurofeedback?
Neurofeedback.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So what are those?
Yeah. So I, for many, many years, have been doing brain-based therapies and, you know, biofeedback, neurofeedback, maybe things people have heard. Biofeedback has been around, God, I think like 80 or 90 years. And neurofeedback has been around 50 years. And there are ways to regulate the nervous system. And neurofeedback is a way to actually alter your brainwave activity. So biofeedback is learning how to consciously control that autonomic nervous system and different functions. So your breath, your heart rate. And you're using technology, sometimes little devices, and you're learning to, you know, do things like sync your heart rate and your breath. There's actually technology called HeartMath that does that. It's clinically proven to reduce anxiety and depression. I mean, it's some great stuff, really easy to use. It's not terribly expensive in terms of technology. It's actually pretty inexpensive. And then neurofeedback is through the subconscious. And with the pairing of technology you're using measurement and technology to learn how to change your brain waves, which when you change your brain waves impacts neurotransmitters, directly impacts. So really simplistically, it regulates your nervous system and your brain waves. And when you regulate them, you stop the dysregulation in behavior. So you reduce things like, you know, worry or agitation or being unfocused. And tens of thousands of research studies, 3,000 peer-reviewed studies. It's great stuff. It's safe, effective, and really truly proven to be effective for everything from autism to anxiety to concussion. I do a lot of work with, you know, kids and young adults. And others, but kids and young adults are my favorite. And it is like the mainstay of what I do, because it really just starts walking somebody down from this stress activated state, which then gives them an ability to think through and take action on different behaviors. Right. So if you're a kid who's on the spectrum and you're rigid, right, it's often really part of the disorder is that things are very black and white. And when you're a black and white person, it means that you're going to have a hard time seeing the gray. And so a lot of friction results with other people because you're like, I don't see it. I don't see it. I don't see it. And it just requires a lot of practice and reinforcement for them to see the gray. Is that kind of a nice way to say that, Linda?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what I often do with somebody, and what happens when there's constant friction, is there's agitation. You get irritable or you get anxious, right? And so when I have somebody on a spectrum, their brain always shows a lot of this inner chatter, like this lots of inner chatter. So what I'll do is relax their the inner chatter, right? It's called, you know, the brain's communication, the networks, the neural networks, and you get it to calm down and then improve their focus at the same time. And it's done through this process where they're hooked up to a computer, and within 2 to 3 seconds of the first time you're hooked up, you'll get feedback, visual and auditory feedback from the computer to produce the healthy combination of brainwaves. And they've just done something so clever. The feedback is a movie that is or isn't playing. And it's just amazing. Within 2 to 3 seconds, the brain will say, oh, if I want Back to the Future to play, I've got to push down this unfocused brainwave and increase this focused brainwave. And it will do it. And then it like exercise, you need to do it over a series of sessions in order for the brain to really take on those changes in a lasting way. So people are doing absolutely not less than 20 sessions, but most people are doing 40 or 50 sessions. And it's a lovely, lovely process. And, you know, I always love when I meet with the parents and hear about all the exciting things that are happening to them. And last night I did a review of somebody who had done 20 sessions, and the mom said, I just had the best parent-teacher conference I've ever had for my kid. And she's in middle school. And she was like, they were all noticing, you know, change in her. And I was like, well, what are they noticing? And they're like, she's organized. She's able to process our directions and take action so that she can get the work done without so much help. And you just see that she's more comfortable and self-confident. And I was like, oh, I love hearing that.
That's wonderful.
No. Pretty so cool stuff, right?
That has to be done in office then. Is that correct?
Well, no, I actually work virtually with people as well. So there's two ways that I work with people with neurofeedback. So one, they come to my center. And if people are in a drivable distance, I start with something called a QEG brain map. And what it is, it's a way for me to get a visual representation of exactly what is going on in the brain. So where there's too much activity or underactivity, and I can see over the structure, and then I can actually see how the neural networks and how the brain is talking to itself, which is how I can see that. And then the second way, if somebody's too far away, like I have somebody in Asia right now, and I have people in a lot of different countries.
A little too far to drive.
What we do is we send them the equipment, and they do what's called a brain check, where we take statistical averages of certain regions, and then we work with people remotely through technology that allows us to see the sessions behind the scenes.
That's amazing.
Pretty cool.
So when you're talking about 20 sessions and 50 sessions, are they weekly or bi-weekly? Or?
Oh, great question. So just like exercise, you can't do it once a week. You really want to be doing at least 2 to 3 sessions a week. Sometimes, like I have somebody pre-pandemic, people would fly in and they would actually do 20 sessions over 2 weeks, and they would do 2 sessions a day. And we would do a bunch of other things too. I have an intensive program, and, you know, we've only had a couple people through the pandemic that are close enough to kind of do that. I'm not so far from New York City. So we work virtually with people. Most people are doing about 3 sessions a week. Sometimes people want to do it 7 days a week. It really depends on the brain profile. And then, you know, I interpret these brain maps and these brain checks. And then I make a protocol and we put it into place. And, you know, it's been an amazing thing. I mean, neurofeedback providers are all over the world. And it's a wonderful, wonderful tool for people from, like I mentioned, those clinical conditions, but many others, including trauma. And I wish more people knew about it because it's just so effective. It's got about a 91% efficacy rating.
Nice.
And according to research, and there's even things that are higher and there's things that are lower depending on different clinical conditions. And it really is powerful, and kids never mind doing it. And if, you know, I've done hundreds of sessions myself, and it's done for peak performance as well, Linda, like all the major athletes do it. Astronauts are mandated to do it before they go to space.
Interesting.
You know, really crisps your thinking.
And does a session, is it short, like half an hour?
They're about a half an hour.
Okay.
And that's what most people do for neurofeedback sessions, about a half an hour.
Oh, fascinating. Well, I have a lot more to learn.
Fascinating.
I love when there are ideas and different ways to approach things. And I love that it's, I prefer non-medicated if possible because of efficacy.
Well, listen, medications always have a side effect. There is no medication that doesn't have a toxic level to it.
Right.
And there's, when we're talking about a developing brain, right, that we really have to be careful what we're putting in there. It's developing. It can alter the development. We know through research that it can alter the development. And what's happening with psychiatric medications is they're being used off label for kids. And we should never, never prescribe first for anybody, but especially a kid. We should be looking at the research. We should be looking through a neuroscience perspective. And that's what my book, It's Going to Be Okay, is about, because I'm looking through the research and it's not pointing to medication first. It's saying, do this, do this, do that. We need to be way more functional. You know, mental health is a dinosaur. It's not using tools like QEG brain maps, what I do, or functional lab work that can give us some real information to help people in, you know, to have cures, to get better, whatever is going on. And, you know, if you have a bipolar or you have mood issues and it's because it's Lyme disease, why are we giving psych meds when it's an infection related? So we need to really focus on those root causes, and patients, parents, they need to push their providers or find a provider, even more ideally, who takes a functional approach through lab work, things like QEG, because there's important data there, and you're going to keep going down rabbit holes if you're not looking at what is going on that is medically related that could be driving some of these symptoms that you're seeing.
I love that. So you are making every effort to determine the source of the problem so that instead of masking the symptoms, it is working on the source. And that is really the only way that any kind of healing takes place, because the healing requires addressing the source, not the symptoms.
That's right. And when they don't, you know, in the medical world, when they can't find what your source is, if you have chronic pain or you have, you know, you're anxious, where are you going to end up? You're going to end up in a therapist's office, right? And if therapists aren't taking a more functional approach, when we know through research that 60 to 70% of people with mental health problems actually have an underlying medical issue that is either the source or contributing factor, right? Because it doesn't mean those issues can't co-occur, but it could be a worsener. And we really, really have to certainly somebody who's very passionate, but I'm a research nerd and I'm always helping people that have gone to a lot of places. And all we have to do is look to what has been done and already there and extrapolate how to best help people. And we really need to have that functional approach. And that's where, you know, I hate to use holistic therapies, the name, but we should just say, let's just look at proven therapies. And guess what? They happen to mostly be natural. and people need to know about that so they can make more informed choices for themselves, because they are, as I said earlier, the CEO of their own healthcare.
I like that. We are the CEO of our own healthcare. That takes some responsibility on our part and a little bit of maybe opening our eyes and looking at things from a different way.
100%. Absolutely. And they can feel good about that instead of scared about it. You know, in my book, It's Going to Be Okay, lay it out, you know, what you need to look for, what you need to ask, what do you actually need to do? And I hope this book is a real eye opener for people who've been struggling. And it is geared for parents, but the same 8 pillars minus parenting is, you know, really relative to everything related to mental health. And even the parenting component, a lot of what I talk about is building coping skills and resiliency. And you're never too old to work on that.
No. And there's always a need to work on that.
Absolutely.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining with me today. Thank you for all of the wisdom that you've shared. I have just been delighted, and the time has flown. So thank you.
Yeah, it has been a great conversation. Thank you so much. And for anybody who's struggling with mental health, you know, always have hope and keep, you know, searching for the right answer for you. And, you know, focus on regulating your nervous system through things like breath work, meditation, neurofeedback, biofeedback. These are things that can help you very quickly.
Oh, I love that. And remember, quickly is about 3 months, so don't expect overnight.
Well, breath work can make you feel better in about 10 seconds. So,
oh, that's,
you know,
true. That's helpful.
Create that lasting change. It requires, you know, more than 30 days of effort. You know, Right. It's not a quick fix.
I like to think of the analogy that healing is like a sunrise and not a light switch. That it's
I like that.
Gradual, but it's beautiful and it's real. So even
that's
if it isn't
Linda.
Well, excellent. Well, in closing, I'd like to share a quote from former First Lady, Lady Bird Johnson. She said, "Encourage and support your kids, because children are apt to live up to what you believe of them." Today, I invite you to do one thing, to encourage your kids, to help them believe in a bright and positive future. See you next time on Linda's Corner.